ESPN College Football Podcast.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is Thursday, October 14th. Kevin Negandhi here with you. And as we do every single Thursday, Joey Galloway will join us to make his picks heading into the weekend. We'll go back and forth and have our usual fun and conversation. Joey's not going to like some of the stuff that Taylor's doing, but Taylor redeemed himself and justified it on the back end. By the way, Taylor's got a phenomenal wedding story this weekend. Really good. You don't want to miss it. He'll also, Joey, give us a perspective as a wide receiver if he was at Oklahoma right now and what the room is like when you're deciding the backup quarterback to become the starting quarterback and how does that play out. And one little nugget during film, how the defense approaches things. Really, really good conversation with Joey. And then Bill Connolly, an ESPN reporter and as well as an analyst, will join us. He'll talk about the biggest flaws with some of the contenders. I'm curious to hear his thoughts about Michigan, Michigan State, Cincinnati teams in the top 10 as we are learning more and more and why everybody's comparing 2021 to 2007. And Bill has the numbers to back that up. Before we get to Joey and our week 7 picks and Bill, as we empty the notebook, two things I want to mention. We're so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content debuting on ESPN next Tuesday, October 19th, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Shanae Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today. That is 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. Cannot wait for that show. Big fan of that entire crew. You can listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcast. Also, for all of our fantasy football nerds, I need a ton of help. Don't sleep on fantasy-focused football 5 days a week, streaming on ESPN Plus and available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Enjoy Joey. Enjoy the story time. My man, Joey, as we get ready for week 7, we will get to the picks in a matter of moments. I do want to get your initial reaction after you've had a few days to what a crazy Saturday it was to see Oklahoma come back with Caleb Williams. You could also call that a Texas letdown. What was your reaction to how that game played out? And then at the same time, what was going on at Ole Miss with the Arkansas game?
Just happened to be sitting next to Sam Acho on Saturday. Exactly. And Sam Acho, much like you and Temple, did not feel good even with the lead. And it was funny because me and Matt were sort of like, game's over. Mm-hmm. You guys got this. And Sam was like, no, it's not. I don't feel good about this yet. And then you could slowly just see the air come out of the room. And poor Acho is sitting there as his team is crumbling. You see this happen at times where a team gets a lead and then they get to the second half and they sort of lose focus of how they got their lead, especially when it starts to happen on like play after play. First play of the game, boom, you go score. At times, that's not good for a football team. And you see teams realize. We've actually seen Alabama do it against Florida. 21-point lead, out early, and then they lose focus. And Texas looked like a team that lost focus, didn't finish. And then you have Caleb Williams comes in and just throws a couple downfield that I don't think any offense coordinator, any coach would say, yeah, throw that ball.
Yeah.
But he throws a couple, they're complete, and now we have a whole quarterback controversy storyline.
That touchdown pass to Mims was so ridiculous. The catch was insane, but just the arm strength on the run. A true freshman, when he could do that and he has all the talent in the world, just ride it. Would you stick with Caleb Williams as your starter heading into the game against TCU?
I don't think it's as easy, especially when you're talking about a quarterback position, and I never do this. Where I'm sitting at a desk, I haven't been to practice. I don't know what the process was for Spencer Rattler to be the starter in the first place. So I never come away from a single game and say, that's your guy moving forward. I always think that coaches will go back, watch the film, reevaluate. I do think you start from zero, though. I do think you start from, okay, we're going to watch both these guys in this game because numbers can lie. And I know we're in the business of numbers. Mm. And so we'll say Oklahoma's offense had this many yards with this quarterback in the game and this many yards.
Yeah, I think it was like 500 with Caleb Williams, right? I think it was like 200 some with Spencer Rattler. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it might be like, the game-winning touchdown was a run play. Mm. Had nothing to do with Caleb Williams. Mm-hmm. But we'll count that to, you know what I mean? So I don't do it that way. I just think the coaches now start from zero the next day, go back, watch the film, reevaluate, and we'll see what happens.
But as a wide receiver, you look at things differently as you feed off the quarterback on availability. I come back to one thing. Mims is a phenomenal talent. He's been lost in the offense when Spencer Rattler's there. And the one thing we saw with Caleb Williams, he was looking for Mims on big plays, right? As a wide receiver, that's got to play a little bit of a role, right?
Yeah, it does. But you also have to realize that coming into this season, Spencer Rattler was the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman.
Oh, understood.
So we're not talking about a guy that's not played any football versus a guy that's not played any football. We're talking about a guy that earned the starting position. He's been there for a while. Like, so I think those are the situations where you have to basically go back and reevaluate and figure out what you want to do moving forward and then figure out which guy is your guy.
Joe, how does that play in the locker room? You play with multiple quarterbacks as well. How does that play in the locker room when the backup does what he does and it's kind of like the elephant in the room? And each locker room's different. I get that. You're not in the Oklahoma locker room. But how's that play out with you and your experiences when you see the backup come in and play really well? And now, I don't want to say a division, but there's some people in that locker room that want the backup quarterback and that there are some people that are loyal to the starting quarterback.
Well, it's interesting because and I think this is it's key for the coaching staff to handle this correctly. See, offensively, we know what happened in a game. We go back, we watch the offensive film. So we get to see exactly where we made our mistakes, who messed up, which guy didn't block, which guy didn't run the right route. And so we don't give the quarterback as much credit or blame as most people do. Mm. Because we, like, you know, you might go into a game and say, this guy threw for 300 yards, X, Y, Z. Or this guy only threw for 100 yards. But we go in and watch this film and see this receiver messed up. This tackle wasn't blocking. He had a lot of pressure. There's bad play. There's a lot of things that go into to stats. Mm-hmm. And so offensively, when we watch the film, we realize where those stats come from. We realize where the mistakes were. So we don't walk out of it with the same feeling as simple as this guy had this many yard offensive yards, this guy had this many. Like, we see how that stuff happens. So it's easier for an offensive guy to say, hey, Spencer Rattler didn't actually play as bad as people think he did. There's a lot of mistakes made by these other positions. So we don't walk out like, hey, he needs to be on the bench. Outside of the offense, though, the defense, they don't get to watch the offensive tape. So they won't come out with the same feeling of how things happen. Uh-huh. They'll just be listening to the Kevin Nagani's of the world who are saying, Caleb Williams should be starting. They'll hear that. Uh-huh. They'll see the stats. It's a little different feeling there. And that's why I think it's important for a coaching staff to explain to a team, look, we got this. We're going to evaluate this. We're going to put out the best player that's going to help us win a football game. Let us handle that. And if your players trust your coaching staff, which I'm imagining that Lincoln Riley has built up enough credit in that locker room that they trust that he's going to do the right thing. They say, coach, you're our leader. Let's go.
It looks like, there's a lot of stuff going on in Norman, but it looks like after, you know, some reports from a local college reporter who went out of their way to get video of a practice that Caleb Williams is getting first team reps. We will see how this plays out. I mentioned this yesterday with Book. The one thing that really stood out was even with Caleb Williams and what he was doing, when they had to get the 2-point conversion, he went back to Spencer Rattler. So there is still a trust factor, right?
Yeah, which is absolutely amazing. Now, a 2-point conversion is a special play. This is a play that we rep since spring.
Yeah.
So we know as a team, if we need 2 points, this is the play we're going to run. You don't have to call it. You don't have to say anything. We know, first play, 2-point conversion, let's go. Clearly, Caleb Williams hadn't been running that play in practice. Because honestly, it wasn't that difficult of a play.
No.
I mean, it's just a rollout. But I think you're right, though. I mean, there was a comfortability that, hey, you've been running it, go do it. And I give Spencer Rattler all the credit in the world to be able to be taken out of a game, stay engaged enough to go back in and run that play. Because a lot of people on all levels of football would have been tapped out. They'd have been over there getting a Gatorade. They had a helmet, would have been thrown in the sand somewhere. Mm-hmm. They would have been like checking the transfer portal to see where they could go. Yeah. In today's world, the transfer portal, they can probably pull that up on their phone.
Yeah.
Get that portal rolling.
Wait a second. So A&M, Georgia, these are all schools that will have openings next year. Ole Miss.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but I gave him credit. He went in and made the play work.
All right. Good stuff. Good conversation. Let's get to our picks because first off, Taylor, can we have a recap? Unfortunately.
Kevin, don't be so down. You are the week winner. 4-6. Joey went 3-7.
Oh,
huge, huge upset. You guys picked 10 games, a whopping 10 games. I'm glad that that Temple pick didn't come back to bite you, Kevin. But you're the victor here.
That was one of his only 3 wins. He would have had 2 wins if he didn't keep on pushing the Temple conversation with Cincinnati.
I'm trying to think what my wins are, to be honest with you, Kev.
Your wins, Joey, were Iowa, Cincinnati, and what am I?
I think it was
Temple.
Temple.
Yeah, no, you picked. Well, Joey picked Cincinnati -29.
Yes, yeah, that's the Cincinnati. Yep.
Iowa and Joey went Nebraska covered. Did I calculate this incorrectly here?
That's you know awesome. You're accurate. You're 100%.
No.
We're good to go.
Hey, look.
So I pick up a game. By the way, have you heard what Taylor did this past week?
Hey, recalculate.
We're good to go. I like it. We pick up a game. Have you, did you hear what Taylor did this past week? He was at a wedding and he married a couple.
Hold up. Taylor married the couple?
Yes.
Indeed.
Clearly, that's why Taylor is over there miscalculating.
I was very tired.
Were you sober when you were marrying this couple?
Yes, I was. I had to be sober. But crisis scenario,
Taylor
guys.
Tapped out.
Moments before I go up there to marry this couple, my pants split open, and it was just a disaster. Grandma and Aunt Debbie they jumped in to save the day. Thank goodness, but it was a little bit tight there for a little bit.
So you legit had a rip right down the seam in your pants, and you're about to marry a couple.
Yeah, ass out. For everyone to see. So
that's incredible.
It was dicey, but we got it done. And I ripped them again later on, but that was, that was bound to happen on the dance floor.
Joey, your assessment?
There's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of conversation there, which then, I mean, that lets us know why he miscalculated this standing.
No, he didn't. He
clearly was not focused on college football this weekend.
Well, congrats to the couple, Taylor, and they've got a story. The guy that married him ripped his pants right before marrying them. All right, let's go to our picks now. So there's a handful of games, and before you come at me, where do we want to make this? A limit of 7 games?
Fine, make it 7.
7 games? All right, then I will choose 7, wisely here.
7 plus Temple. Let's go.
I will choose wisely. Here's the key here. I'm also picking storylines and conversations too. So let's start here specifically Oklahoma State, number 12 in the land at Texas, Texas licking their wounds, Texas favored -5. Who you got?
Man, I hate these. I hate these kind of lines with a team like Oklahoma State who I'm not quite sold on yet.
Yep.
But I'll take them. Give me Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I hate this, especially when you look at the series and how they've gone back and forth and then the emotional swing with Texas. I'm going to take Oklahoma State for one reason only. They play defense. They play defense. That's the one thing I know with Oklahoma State. And when you come into a game like this with Texas, I have no idea what to expect and how they're going to respond after what we saw with their collapse. So I'm taking Oklahoma State and the points. All right, our next game. Number 10, Michigan State. 4.5 favorites at Indiana. I am going with Sparty here. It feels like everybody's probably going with Sparty, but they've just got so many offensive weapons. I'm not sure if Indiana can keep pace, so I'm laying the points on the road.
I think this is more about the struggles of Indiana. Indiana hadn't been the team we expected them to see. I'll take Michigan State also. I do think they're playing with a lot of confidence. But one thing you know, and when you have a Michigan State line, it's going to be right around in that 4 to 5
area. Yeah, at least for the majority of the game, right? For three quarters, you can't feel comfortable.
It doesn't matter who they're playing. They're going to be about a 4 to 5 point favorite.
Yes. Okay, so we're lockstep together here. Let's get your this is a good one because the over-under was started at 77 and it's now to 82. Number 13, Ole Miss, laying 2.5 at Tennessee. Lane going back to Neyland. Who you got in this one?
I saw this over-under. I wanted to get it, but my goodness, that's a lot of points.
That's a hell of a lot of points, but when you talk about over-unders, the over is Lane's best friend. It has been in recent weeks.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm going to go with Ole Miss.
Going with Ole Miss, man. Yeah, I'm going with Ole Miss as well.
I think their defense is going to get a couple stops along the way, and it's going to be exciting. One thing you know, that it's going to be exciting.
Yes.
Ole Miss in any game, anywhere, is going to be fun to watch and exciting.
Because you have no idea. You know he's going to open up the playbook, but you have no idea how what's going to happen next. Yeah. I also think Tennessee can run the football, so I'm kind of curious how Ole Miss handles that. Tennessee's running attack has been fantastic. It depends on who you compare, who they played against, but they've taken advantage of it so far in the last few weeks. Okay, let's get to Auburn at 17, Arkansas, and the number 17 team in the nation is laying 4.5 points. Man, Arkansas has gone through a run here, and Auburn licking their wounds after this past week against Georgia. I'm going with Arkansas, but I can see Auburn winning this game outright, but I'm going with Arkansas.
I like Arkansas too, Kev, and you'd be a terrible poker player. I can tell it by 5 words in to your first sentence, which direction you're going. Like, your poker face is absolutely terrible. So he's like, well, man, Arkansas has been through, man, they've been through a run here. He's going to Arkansas. Like,
it's the setup. It's always about the setup.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So you're going to Arkansas?
I'm taking Arkansas.
Man, we are really boring. This is no separation here. All right, so we're through 4 games. How about this one? Because of the conversation piece here surrounding the days of Ed Orgeron and Baton Rouge. Number 20, Florida.
I'll take Florida.
Favored by 11.5 in Baton Rouge.
I will take Florida. LSU right now looks like a team that is ready to tap out. They look like a team that, you know, how we just joked about Spencer Rattler was on the sideline.
Yes.
The portal. It's like, they look like a team that is like, man,
yep.
Look at the schedule. How many games do we have left? Stay healthy. The guys who are hurt, I don't think they're trying to come back.
They're looking at the NFL draft or the transfer portal.
They're looking. Booker McFarland has tapped out.
Yes, he has.
Even he is. When the guys who are now long gone that have been willing to, in their championship year, just a couple years ago, were wearing their colors and talking all that noise, 2 years later have literally waved the white flag, your school is in trouble. whoever you'd have said, whatever that number was, give me Florida.
Boog has tapped out. I'm with you. I'm taking Florida as well, because you're 100% right. They're looking at the transfer portal and they're looking at the NFL draft. That is plain and simple. And it's not going to get better for LSU when you look at the rest of their schedule. Okay, so we're through five games. We're pretty darn boring so far. All right, let's get to another storyline and let's go to the Big Ten. That is number two, Iowa. Favored by 11.5 points. We're talking about an offense that has really struggled to find any type of rhythm. Hosting Purdue, a team coming off a bye. Jeff Brohm, 3-1 against Kirk Ferentz. Who you got in this one?
I like Purdue because of the points. I don't think Purdue wins. Because I think Iowa is in one of those seasons where their defense is going to make timely plays and save the offense. I think Purdue has enough to make this thing close. Iowa wins, but I'll take Purdue in the points.
I'm going to take Iowa, and I just do not feel good with that game at all. But I've got to separate myself from you as I continue to pick up ground. So, oh, God, it's the idea that I'm laying double-digit points with the Hawkeyes just makes me want to throw
up.
Oh, man. All right, our last game. There's a handful of options, but I want to go to this one because I want to hear your thoughts on it, because you brought up Booger, especially when you're rooting for your alma mater. Miami at North Carolina, and the line, Tar Heels are laying 7.5 points. That is a ton of points there for the Tar Heels and Mack Brown.
The Tar Heels are terrible. I love Mack.
Mack ain't going to blame you for saying that.
But my goodness.
Yes.
But the Hurricanes are terrible.
Terrible.
This is a matchup of terribleness. But I do know that on any given Saturday, Sam Howell and the North Carolina offense can be explosive. We've seen them also not be explosive.
The defense is not good, too. Like, they can't stop anybody.
I'm going to take North Carolina, and I don't want to, but I'm going to take them anyhow because I'm thinking that Sam Howell might just quit running the ball and let's throw it deep. He's athletic. He's going to get you. He's going to get you about 80 yards a game, but I would rather see the deep ball. I'll take Carolina.
Oh gosh. This one's just, that line is so awful at 7.5. If it was 6.5, I'd be like Carolina all the way.
Yeah.
The only thing is that it's in Carolina and I don't know what Miami has on the road.
I'm telling Mac, if you pick against me, let's go.
I think JV will be mad if I pick against him.
Yeah, absolutely right. There's another guy that is tapped out.
I'm going with Carolina because they're at home. There's no way. It's just that line is just brutal. And Vegas just knows they're torturing us. All right, Joey, it's been fun. We got seven games.
We have eight games. What we're going to do is you have Temple. I have whoever Temple's playing. That's just understood in our group every week.
Hold on. But they're not on the board. I'm not making them a team that's on the board.
They're on the board, Kev.
No, we're not putting them on the board.
Hey, Kev, you're not UConn. You can't just act like football.
This is true. By the way, how awful is UConn? Like, holy crap.
I don't know if I've ever had so much fun watching a game that nobody cared about. It's amazing that you can have a game that is so bad that people care only because it's so bad. And it was actually fun. It's actually fun to watch.
It was one of those friends and family games, right? But we knew the friends weren't even watching. So by the way, Temple's on a bye. So we will leave it at that.
Hey, Taylor, before next week, get the actual calculations right of this past weekend. So don't let Kev
My man, what? I was right. I was looking at your head-to-head picks. You guys picked five games. Kevin went 3-2. You went 2-3. And on the picks that you guys did together, you were 1-4.
Oh,
so there you go. That's
so
the breakdown.
I picked up a game, Joey. Yep. I was right.
The scarier part is, how can we be 1-4 in the games we agreed on? That is absolutely embarrassing.
That shows that Mac Brown is speaking to something the truth. We don't know what the hell we're doing. Just blame the media.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
We do it every Thursday here in the College Football Podcast. We bring in a college football reporter slash insider. He is a writer on ESPN.com as well as ESPN Plus. He's an analyst, and that is Bill Connolly, as he takes a look and breaks down stuff past the numbers. And sometimes the numbers reveal a lot. You have an article up on ESPN Plus, what happens after an unranked team beats a number one. Of course, that is A&M and what they did against Alabama. I found it curious because that blends into another article that you have about the breakdowns of every playoff contender. And I want to tie both of this together because the last time we saw a Nick Saban team in Alabama lose to an unranked team was 2007.
That's right.
And many people, after what we saw this past weekend, are comparing what we are going through in 2021, specifically this Saturday, was like, oh gosh, this is the culmination of what we're seeing and what we saw and experienced in 2007. 40 ranked teams have already lost. That is in the same conversation as 2007 so far, as we are at the halfway point of the season. So Bill, with all of that, what's your summation, as we will get to specific teams, what's your summation of what you've seen so far after the first 6 weeks of college football?
Well, it's funny. I mean, the 2007 season is just regarded as holy by college football fans because of how wild things got. And so anytime you start to make comparisons, it can feel really forced, right? Like we're trying to will this to happen, but it's still not going to be 2007 and all that. Well, the comparisons are kind of smacking us in the face right now with the number of ranked teams that have lost, 40 so far, which narrowly surpasses 2007. The number one team lost to an unranked team in week six, a la USC Stanford in 2007. As you said, Alabama lost to an unranked team for the first time since 2007. So it really is tracking so far, as crazy as it is. Now, the thing about 2007 is it kept raising the bar. Like week seven is when Kentucky beat the number one team, which technically, you know, if we could continue that this weekend with Kentucky, Georgia, if we wanted. But the number two team also lost. Cal lost to Oregon State. So Iowa would have to lose to Purdue if we're really going to continue the 2007 vibes here. But this is exactly what college football needed, to be quite honest. It was pretty chalky these last few years. I think ratings kind of suggested that, you know, people, when they know what the result's going to be, they're less likely to watch, and nobody knows what's going to happen right now, aside from maybe the Georgia games that happen each week. So it's been just a ton of fun to write about, and I think it's been a ton of fun to watch.
I find it very similar to March Madness. We want the chaos, right? Yeah. We want the chaos in the regular season. And then in the Final Four, we want some of our blue bloods. I think that college football is very much the same way. We want the chaos during the season. And then when the Final Four comes, we're not sure how this is going to play out in college football. But I think we got bored with the same usual suspects. And the usual suspects are not in this conversation, like a Clemson right now. Ohio State's on the outside looking in, but I think everybody believes Ohio State could potentially control their own destiny, considering who they face with Penn State, Michigan State, and eventually maybe an Iowa team down the road. I play this game here with Booger McFarland. How good is, and we went through a few teams yesterday on the podcast, and I want to know, with the same type of theme here, because of that article where you break down flaws of every playoff contender on ESPN Plus. Let's go through some of these teams here to give us an idea of, you know, how good are they and their biggest flaw. Yep. And let's start specifically with Georgia. How good is this team? And I already know what their biggest flaw is, but I can't wait for you to talk about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you're the best team in the country when your biggest flaw is basically, we don't know if something is a strength yet. And that's basically where we're at with Georgia. Their defense, you know, it's been number one in the last 2 years in my defensive SP Plus rankings. It is demonstrably better this year. The way they control the line of scrimmage is, you know, every play they control the line of scrimmage. And then at the end of the play, like three 260 pounders are piling on top of the ball carrier. It feels very much like 2011 Alabama in that regard. So because their defense is so good, their offense has barely had to run an important play through six games. And we're to a point now halfway through the season where we know that when they're up two touchdowns, Stetson Bennett throws a heck of a, just a beautiful deep ball to wide open receivers. That's great. That's a very important thing. We don't know if they're down 7 points in the third quarter, what that's going to look like and how, you know, can they make a pass when they actually have to make a pass. Last year, that was an issue. Last year, the defense and controlling the line of scrimmage worked against most teams, but against the teams that actually broke through and scored big on their defense, they couldn't, Bennett forced the issue and threw a bunch of picks and, under 50% completion rate, just didn't do very well. So that's kind of where we're at. We don't know if they've answered that question. We don't even know who's going to be throwing passes from game to game for them. And it's not an outright weakness, but we just don't know if it's a strength yet.
Let's go with number two. How good is Iowa and what's their biggest flaw?
I mean, they're always about the easiest team in the country to explain, right? I mean, we know exactly what they're going to try to do. They're going to play defense every year. They get better at it. It's the same principles. They don't want to blitz all that often. They want to just flood, play the most ridiculous zone defense with seven really long armed guys getting hands on every single pass that you throw. And it works really well. Their special teams is great too. And if they can basically control the game like that and require Spencer Petras and the offense to basically make two big plays a game, just two huge plays in key moments, they're going to win any game they play when they have that recipe. But their offense is just so inefficient. I just can't. Mm-hmm. It's we're all just kind of waiting for the day where this backfires on them. They're 119th in my success rate measure, which is, how frequently are you getting 50% of your yards on first down, 70% on second, 100% on third and fourth. 119th in the country, just ahead of Vanderbilt. They go three and out 35% of the time. That's 106th. It puts so much pressure. And if your defense is ever off, if a team ever figures out an answer, kind of like it seemed Penn State had right at the start of the game before Sean Clifford got hurt, I just don't see how they keep up. I don't see how they manage to stay ahead in those situations.
The best way I could describe Iowa's field position.
Yeah.
Their punter is one of their MVPs, right? Yeah. Because that's the key in any situation. They will punch you. And then what are you going to do here inside the 20 with that defense on the other side?
No, it's such a wonderful recipe for getting the most out of the roster that you have, and it should be commended. Iowa fans have been yelling at me on Twitter for weeks because my numbers don't like them all that much, but it's been an incredible recipe and it's worked. I mean, they haven't lost since the second game of last year, and clearly they know how to win games. It's just, if you want to win the national title, you're going to have to beat some really, really good offenses. And one of them is probably going to break down your defense.
Bill, I love that Iowa fans are getting mad at you because the numbers you're just showing the numbers.
Oh yeah, no, I am a spreadsheet. I am a spreadsheet to people on Twitter. So they're going to yell at me for it.
That is incredible. All right. How good is Cincinnati? What's their biggest flaw?
I love Cincinnati. I mean, obviously they only get so many chances per season to prove themselves. If you want to use what we used to say about Boise State, about how they can save stuff for three games and wear and tear and grind and all those things, that's fine. But the way they matched up physically with Georgia last year, I think was a big tell for how seriously we should be taking them. They had that game. There are about three opportunities that were to salt that game away in the fourth quarter last year. They broke even on the line of scrimmage until their tackle got hurt or ejected late in the first half of that game. Obviously, that was last year, but so many of those players are back. And I think that tells us what we need to know about their physicality. The fact that they dominated Notre Dame from a play-to-play basis, like I think it was about 1.5 yards per play more for them than Notre Dame. Like we know what we need to know there. Their offense is explosive. Their defense is innovative and physical and awesome. The biggest problem I have is that the offense isn't always awesome. It's kind of a rhythm offense. I likened it to like a streaky three-point shooter in that, their overall numbers are great. They still go three and out 30% of the time. That ranks 79th. They always have this stretch of like four possessions where, it's three punts and a field goal attempt. And I mean, never mind playoff teams against an SMU, like that could result in you being down 17 points very quickly. And so that's the one thing they need to watch. They do start slowly sometimes, and that's not going to cut it in a playoff situation, but they're extremely well-rounded and they should be commended for that.
We are going to learn a lot on October 30th weekend. about the entire Big Ten East.
Yeah.
Because I can group this whole thing on how good is the Big Ten East and what is their biggest flaw? Penn State's at Ohio State. We'll see what happens to Sean Clifford over the next 2 weeks in his status. But to me, we will learn a heck of a lot about these two programs and where they're at. And that is Michigan at Michigan State. So let's just narrow this down to these two teams. How good is Michigan and what is their biggest flaw right now?
Yeah, Michigan is sort of in the same boat as Georgia in that they haven't really been in situations where they have to pass all that often. And so they've been able to kind of control the game, control the line of scrimmage and get by. But I mean, they've been awesome just game to game so far. They're eighth in the AP poll. They're fifth in FPI. They're eighth in my SP plus. Like they've earned their spot here in the top 10 for sure. Whether they can go take this further, whether they can be, you know, top four, for instance, a lot of that's going to depend on how they actually finish drives. They're creating plenty of scoring opportunities. They're settling for a ton of field goals. There's a measure that we have called goal to go TD rate, which is self-explanatory. They're 68th there. Only 77% of the time do they end up scoring touchdowns in goal to go situations. And with the number of close games they're going to be in potentially down the stretch, I mean, at Michigan State, at Penn State, Ohio State, even at Maryland or Northwestern or Indiana, some of these games are going to be close, and 7 points versus three is going to make all the difference here.
They showed me a lot in a close game on grinding that out, that defense stepping up and taking the ball from Adrian Martinez on a drive that it was like, we're going to see where Nebraska's at. And I felt bad for Adrian Martinez. that defense, seriously, you know, it is a Michigan defense, something that we've grown up to see through the years, and they've lost their way. I think over the last couple of years, they've turned things around. All right. The guy, everybody talks about the transfer portal and the adjustment. No one has maximized the transfer portal better than Mel Tucker and what he has done with this offense and how explosive they are. Every single week, it's one guy who's the player of the week. This guy's the player of the week. This guy's the player of the week. Yep. A ton of success. How good is Michigan State right now, and what's their biggest flaw?
It's so jarring because most of the teams we're talking about are so reliable in terms of identity, you know, Iowa, Michigan, even Cincinnati, Georgia. It feels like we're not watching Michigan State when we watch Michigan State this year. It's a friend of mine likened it to 2016 Penn State, a team that, you know, basically they're solid defensively, but not amazing. They were efficient, but not real efficient on offense. They just knew they were going to get five or six explosions over the course of 60 minutes and beat you with it. And with Naylor, Reed, and Walker, I don't know if anybody in the country has a more explosive trio than that with what they've produced so far. The main issue I have, I do think, is on the defensive side of the ball, though. They don't make a lot of negative plays against the run. They don't force you off schedule amazingly well. And they allow you to pitch and catch is the way I put it in the Monday piece. They are 94th in completion rate allowed. Teams do not throw deep on them. They just, nibble constantly 6, 8, 10 yards downfield, and Michigan State allows it. They probably need to figure out how to get a little more aggressive in certain situations if they're going to survive what is an absolutely brutal stretch run for them. That seems to be the difference right now. But if it's a big play contest, we know who's going to win it.
Yeah. Talk about four plays with 60 plus yards this past week against Rutgers. Peyton Thorne's done a really good job. And you can make the case that, and I could be wrong, Bill, just weigh in, that their defense is on the field a lot because they have so many explosive plays. They're not long drives by Michigan State, right? They're just quick scores.
Yeah, this is, if we're likening this to an old Big 12 team, like an Oklahoma State or Baylor that just destroyed you with big plays, those teams would try to get, or especially Baylor would try to get super aggressive on defense too, to try to, those quick little touchdown pick six kind of deals, those quick combinations. Michigan State's a lot more like Oklahoma State was in that, like, bend don't break on defense. Try to limit the damage there. And then three play possessions on offense.
Sure is working. And Kenneth Walker has been outstanding when it comes to stability with the running attack to help Peyton Thorne, especially with the passing game. Bill, this is great. You can check out the article that we were talking about specifically in the biggest flaws with the college football playoff contenders. That is over on ESPN Plus. Always great to have you with us here, Bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Big thanks to Bill and Joey. Great perspective here on 2021 and how that's compared to 2007. We love the mayhem. Again, Saturday was fantastic. Before we go, there's a great game on ESPN Radio this weekend. That is Florida at LSU. Tune in at 11 a.m. Eastern time. Baton Rouge is going to be a little tight about this game. Oh, as we said yesterday with Boog, Florida's going to try and kick LSU when it's down. We talked about this as well with Joey. It's going to be interesting how that plays out on the field. Want to remind our audience as well, the ESPN College Football Podcast will be back on Sunday. Paul Feinbaum, Matt Berry will be with you. Those guys will be recapping the weekend. Don't miss it. Taylor, fantastic job on the other side. Glad that the pants were sewn up and that you delivered a great wedding and married a fantastic couple who have a great story. So appreciate that. I've done that once too, by the way, Taylor. I've been an official once and married one of my closest buddies. And that is a little nerve wracking. You don't want to be the storyline on a wedding.
No, I'm sure you did great though. You're a pro. Oh my God. You probably crushed it.
No, we had fun, man. We had fun. And my pants stayed in one piece. So I was okay with that. I didn't have to deal with that because I can't even imagine what was going through your mind the day of. But afterwards, I'm sure you threw down a couple cocktails and enjoyed it. We hope everybody gets the chance to enjoy the weekend. Until next week. Enjoy football.